Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam. Tato Jayam Udirayen. Nasta Prayeshva Bhadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttama Shloke. Bhakti Bhavati Naishtiki. Okay, before we begin, I wanted to share with you that our board member, Manumati Prabhu, suggested that we close the curtains and let the speaker be more centered so that everyone doesn't have to crane their neck as much. So with your permission, we'll try that out. And so today we will be proceeding with the second canto. But first let's go to our verses for memorizing, please. 1825. Vipada shantuta shashvad tatra tatra jagad goro bhavato darshanam yatsyad apunar bhavadarshanam. I wish that all those calamities would happen again and again, so that we could see you again and again. For seeing you means that we will no longer see repeated births and deaths. Etan nirvidyamananam ichitam akitobhayam yoginam nipanir nitam harirnam anukirtanam. O King, constant chanting of the holy name of the Lord after the ways of the great authorities is a doubtless and fearless way of success for all, including those who are free from material desires, those who are desirous of all material enjoyment, and also those who are self-satisfied by dint of transcendental knowledge. Ayur haritivai pumsam udyanastam chayanasau tasyarte yachano nita uttama shloka varyaya. Both by rising and setting, reaches the duration of life of everyone, except one who utilizes the time by discussing the topics of the all-good personality of Godhead. Jai. So this morning we're going to use this book for the last time. Please turn to page 100, chapter 13. Thus far in our study of the second canto, we have read the two verses. Let's see, verse number 4 and verse number 11 from chapter 1. So we'll use this chapter 13 to summarize the contents between the beginning of chapter 1 and the verse today, which is chapter 3, verse 10. So we're basically covering the first and second chapters of the second canto in this verse. So for recording purposes, I'd like to ask everyone who's going to read about at least 5 verses and minimize the passing of the microphone for poor Vaibhava Prabhu's sake. Vaibhava Prabhu edits all of these recordings, which can be very laborious, especially when there's long gaps between the speakers. So if you're going to read, please read a few and then pass it quickly and be prepared to read. All right? So, Sagar Prabhu, do you want to start? Or tell you what, why don't we start it with Garrison since we're going to hand it down there. There we go. Thank you.
Sukadeva replies, "Dear King, your very question is magnificent and deep, and so is a field of wisdom for the hands of all to reap. The answers to your questions have already been endorsed by learned transcendentalists, so let us start our course. The ordinary person is materially engrossed, with endless themes for gossiping and countless fools to toast. They chase down money in the day, have sex and sleep at night, and envy others till they die while thinking all is right. Protected by the fragile troops of body, kids, and spouse, Such people discount God and hope that death will skip their house. Eternal souls though they may be, with many lifetimes past, they foolishly construct another life that cannot last. Enlightened souls, by contrast, rid themselves of worldly pain by hearing and reciting Krishna's pastimes in his name. The Supersoul dwells within is no one else but he, the mastermind of everything, who ends one's misery. So whether it's by scrutinizing spirit wrapped in skin, or practicing some yoga till you grow austere and thin, or filling your commitments to your country, kin, and wife, to think of Krishna as you die completes a perfect life. Because of this, the topmost transcendentalists agree, describing Krishna's glory is the greatest ecstasy. When I was young and thought Lord Krishna something more abstract, my father taught me Bhagavat to help me get on track.
Although I fully understand that I was not my flesh, the pastimes of Lord Krishna caught my ear and sounded fresh. You have asked me, is it if you hang on until you are very old and 100 years without awareness of the soul? If you invest one moment asking who you really are and start your search for truth, you will be better far off by far. The saintly king Khatwanga asked the gods when he would die. You will die within a moment, said the gods in a swift reply. The king was well prepared for death and feeling no distress. He promptly thought of Krishna and attained complete success. My dear King Vishnu Rath, you are blessed with much more time. You have 7 full remaining days to concentrate your mind. Now you can meet approaching death without a trace of fear by cutting ties to body, kin, and all that you hold dear.
Yes, even leading people we might honor and admire do not prepare themselves for death by changing their desire. Desire will continue even when their bodies die. The body dies. But if you just desire Krishna, death does not apply. The first step is to understand that death comes unannounced. So if you want to leave this world, you must become renounced. The self-control, abandon all the comforts of the home and sit down in a sacred place, content to utter Om. Though meditation starts this way, there is so much more, you see. The mind must be subdued, O King, but not repressively. God's form is more attractive than the pure but formless sound. So try to see the form of God pervading all around.
Dear Shukdev, the king inquired, how does one absorb the restless mind in Krishna as the all-pervading Lord? Said Shukdev, the first step is to purify your mind. Use yoga, stance and breath control. Your thoughts will be refined. Although Lord Krishna is much more to start your meditation, consider him as he appears throughout the whole creation. His universal body's feet are planets known as hell. His head is formed of higher worlds where pious persons dwell. The cosmos is his eye socket. The sun globe is his eye. His eyelids are the day and night that blinks as time goes by. The Lord of Death lives in his jaws, rebuking every sin. His upper lip is modesty. Desire is his chin. Affection is his set of teeth, illusion is his smile, and mountains are collections of his bones stacked in a pile. The trees and shrubs comprise the universal body's hair. The rivers are his veins, his breath consists of swirling air. The ever-changing moon becomes his mind, so it is said. The water-bearing clouds make up the hair upon his head.
His artistry appears in birds like peacocks and the rest. The singing gods exemplify his musing at its best. His face consists of priests, his arms the fearless warrior caste, his thighs the wealthy merchants, and his feet the working class. As ordinary person manifests 1,000 dreams, Lord Krishna lives in everything in countless ways and themes. A person seeking liberation sees the Lord in all. In fact, there is no other place a person's glance can fall. In higher words, the God reside in pleasure-filled abodes. Though hidden from our vision, they are described in Vedic codes. The followers of Vedic texts show sterling qualities, while foolish brutes will just accept what they can touch and see. As one advances spiritually, the chance sometimes appears to join the gods in heaven for 1,000 pleasing years. A precious moment wasted seeking godly paradise is history and cannot be brought back at any price. Material desires lead to war and scarcity. Why not accept a simple life without anxiety? When you can sleep upon the floor with arms to prop your head, what need is there for pillow and a splendid silken bed?
Are used clothes available? Do trees not give their shade? Do rivers now deny a man a drink on scorching days? Will God ignore his servants who want nothing for themselves? Then why should sages flatter those possessed of excess wealth? While living in a world of names where nothing ever lasts, where souls accept themselves as bodies built of sins amassed, wherever you may find yourself in any time or place, just glorify Lord Krishna and recall his lovely face. Approach the gods with some request or some complaint to lodge, and you will always find a god who is able to oblige. But neither gods nor even Krishna's cosmic deity can give you love of Krishna. That must come from devotees. Perhaps you have transcended any taste for the mundane. Perhaps you're feeling full of lust that's driving you insane. Perhaps you simply want to merge in cosmic suicide. In any case, just worship Krishna and you'll be purified.
That last verse is today's verse, Akama Sarva Kamava. So this, as I mentioned, is one that just missed the cut for verses to memorize. It's such an easy verse to memorize and such a useful one. But Gopal Prabhu will be speaking about that in just a few moments. I'd like to just summarize here what we read in chapter 1 and 2 of the first canto. So, of the second canto. So, the first chapter begins with these very powerful statements by Shukadeva Goswami. We studied a couple in detail the last couple of days. Atma Sanyeshwa Satsupi, remember the fallible soldiers of wife, country, family. This is, as was discussed, was it Bhakti Nick who gave that class? Yeah, Bhakti Nick was talking about how it's not that these things cannot be used in Krishna's service. You know, you can raise a family for Krishna. So family does not mean automatically maya. It's just that people who think that that will protect them always end up disappointed. That, like Brahmatirtha Prabhu was talking about this man who passed away, this young man in his 40s. He left a wife and a couple of young kids, and it was very tragic. So at the eulogy, all of his friends were standing up to speak. There were a couple of hundred people present, and all the friends could talk about, every single one of them said what a great Gator fan he was. They're trying to just reach in their hearts to glorify this person and express the meaning of his life. And he said, every single one said, oh, he was such a great fan of the Gators. So these are the fallible soldiers. See, the football team, political party, the nationality, the religious cause, you know, all of these things really cannot protect you. It's all your relationship with Krishna. That's what Shukadeva is saying in these verses. So then yesterday's verse, Sesha Prabhu was talking about the Etanya Vidyamananam, one of our memorization verses, that the process of chanting the holy name is for everybody. So it's very similar to the verse we're studying today, which is saying devotional service is for everybody. So this is also very relevant and important for us to understand, because there's so many different personalities who come to devotional service. See, there's a joke that you know, if you don't like organized religion, then you should join ISKCON. Because it's quite diverse, and the personalities that you encounter in Krishna consciousness, it's like chanting doesn't change you, it really makes you more of who you are. It kind of brings into focus who you really are. And we once had a business associate who made a lot of money. She was just a very ordinary housewife, but she got in this business and made a lot of money. And she said the same thing about money, that if you suddenly got rich, it wouldn't change you. It would just make you more of who you really are. So when she said that, I thought about chanting and Krishna consciousness. It does the same thing with devotees. You know, it just really brings out your personality and your individuality. And people look at us externally and say how homogenous we are, but and because, you know, we all get up at the same time and we all chant the same mantras. That, you know, okay, these are people without a great deal of imagination and individuality. So, of course, nothing could be farther from the truth. The beautiful thing about Krishna consciousness is it just doesn't require us to give up our individuality. In fact, it's impossible to do that. You cannot give up your individuality, even if you try to. You know, that it, just by joining something and by behaving in a way with others and, you know, lockstep, it just doesn't work. Like the great communist experiment of the 20th century was meant to do that. All the people in communist countries were encouraged to dress the same in some cases. They were all told to address each other as comrade. Everybody is equal, each according to his ability, each according to his need. That was the slogan. So the state owned everything, and then this was supposed to be a worker's paradise. But in fact, everybody exercised their individuality, and it didn't pan out. So people were discouraged at being repressed from their individuality. And and their incentive to work diminished, and therefore the economy was not able to compete with the free market economy. So that was the history. So in the same way, we cannot get rid of our individuality. And Shukadeva is pointing this out in both of the verses, yesterday's and today's verses. So wherever you're at, it's fine. You don't have to, you can't change that. But what matters is where you go from here. So philosophically, these are some of the main points from the first chapter. Then the second chapter deals with the universal form. So Parikshit Maharaj is asking Shukadeva, how do we see Krishna? How does one meditate on Krishna, especially a neophyte, a beginner? So this is very, very reminiscent of what chapter in the Bhagavad Gita? 11th chapter, right. 11th chapter. Therein Arjuna is asking. You see, Arjuna's mood changes in the Bhagavad Gita many times. If you track it, he goes up and down and back and forth. He's quite a variety of human emotions Arjuna's expressing. So in the 4th chapter, for example, he's expressing skepticism. Well, you're saying that you taught the sun god, but he's much older than you. You know, so what do you say about that? You know, it's kind of a challenging question. And then by the time we get to the 10th chapter of the Gita, Arjuna is saying, Param Brahma Param Dhamma Pavitram Paramamama. You are the supreme Brahman. You are the supreme abode. You are the supreme pure. So he's totally changed. And then he says, all the great sages of the past, Narada, Devala, Asita, they've all said this about you, and now you're saying it about yourself. So very emphatically, at this point, Arjuna is convinced by the 10th chapter. Then he asks Krishna, how should I meditate on you? And in chapter 10, then, what does Krishna talk about for the rest of the chapter? 10. Yes, yeah, all of his opulences. Among fish, I am the... Yes, of mountains, I am... Or of immovable things, I am the... Himalayas, right. Right. All of the best of everything. And then at the end of that chapter, he says... Yad yad vimuti mat sattvam srimad arjitam eva va. Whatever beautiful, glorious, or mighty creation you see, no, it is just mamo tam jesa tam bhavam. It's just a spark of my splendor. So, in this way, he prepares Arjuna for the idea of the universal form. Then Arjuna, now being curious, he's gone past on reverence. Now he's curious, and like even a little greedy in a way. Could I see this universal form of yours? So Krishna says, yes, I give you divine eyes. And then Arjuna sees it. Then his emotions go into, whoa, this is so splendid, it's beautiful, it's glorious. And then he sees, as Shukadeva also mentions, that death is Krishna's jaw. So he sees everyone on the battlefield running into Krishna's mouth, and Krishna is chewing, you know, the universal form. And now Arjuna gets very frightened. Everyone he loves, everyone he knows is dying. And of course, that's true for us all. But when he saw it that graphically, he became very frightened. And he asked Krishna, "Oh, I'm please tell me your mission," with great fear now. He says, I desire to know, why are you here? Why are you doing this? Why are you killing everybody? And Krishna says, what? Who are you? He says, who are you? What is your mission? Kalosmi. Time I am. Come to destroy the worlds. And this is the same verse that was quoted by Robert Oppenheimer in the New Mexico desert when the first atomic bomb exploded. This famous scientist, he recited that verse. He's actually a very educated man on philosophy. So this was the history of, this is a parallel rather of the universal form. Arjuna saw it and became very frightened. Shukadeva is advising Parikshit, this is the first step in God realization, to meditate on the presence of Krishna in everything. And just one last point on this. It's very interesting in Krishna's pastimes with the gopis. After Krishna left Vrindavan, the gopis, first of all, were very upset to see Akura driving Krishna and Balaram out of Vrindavan. And Krishna saw them as he was leaving, and he sent back a message, "I will return." So they were just absolutely brokenhearted by this. And he did not return for some time, but after he dealt with Kamsa and gone to school and gotten his education with Sandipani Muni, then he was in Mathura, and the Bhagavatam describes that Krishna has a problem. He promised to return, and yet he'd also been away from all of the Mathura Basis, including his parents, for so long that he didn't want to leave Mathura. So what did he do? Anyone remember? Yes, it was... his cousin. He looked very much like Krishna. Uddhava. Yes, Uddhava. So he sent Uddhava, and Uddhava went to see all the residents of Vrindavan. He'd never been to Vrindavan before. So first he went to Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda and talked with them. And then as his chariot was parked out in front of their house. So it describes that all the gopis are looking. And they're very sarcastically, they start saying, "Oh, perhaps this is Akrura's chariot. He's come to give us some more good news. Maybe now he wants to take our bodies to Mathura and burn them. You know, they say, Akrura has ruined their lives." A very funny name, Akrura, you know, because it means, what, Professor Jacob? It means uncruel. Akrura, one who is not cruel. Cruel. And the gopis also very sarcastically say, "Yeah, this Akrura." So as it turns out, Krishna has given Uddhava a message for the gopis. And one of the things he tells them is, how could you ever be separated from me? Because everything is my energy. So why are you thinking you're separate? I'm all around you. So they did not exactly accept that argument, but it's very interesting that he makes that same point that is being made here in the second canto, how Krishna is everything. So how can you really be separated from him for a moment? Everything you see is Krishna. So that brings us up to chapter 3, where Shukadeva then begins advising, if you have this desire, talk to this god. If you have that desire, talk to that god. And so that's where we will pick up with today's verse. Any questions on the first two chapters? Okay, Arjuna asked to see the universal form in the 11th chapter. That's all I was saying. He was curious to see this cosmic form. It's an imaginary form. The universal form does not exist. There's no temple dedicated to the universal form. Maybe the temple, anyway. Except the Mayavadi temples might have such a deity. But there is no universal form per se. It's strictly an imaginary form meant to help a neophyte think about God. Garrison? Thinking of Krishna's feet as hell, yes. It's not Krishna's feet. This is the universal form's feet.
Universal forms.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yes, these three planetary systems, so the feet are naturally the lowest, therefore they're compared to hell. Okay, anything else?
Else, but rather just go where we go from here. So that implies that we need to change our desires. That you are implying.
It means that we need to redirect. Yes, redirect our loving propensity. That's all. Whether we have a lot of attachments, or whether we're naturally detached, or even if we're interested in liberation. And we're just, which is really a very self-centered desire. It's compared in a few places to suicide. Yeah, you're just like suicide is the most selfish act a human being can perform in most cases, you know, because there's no concern for anyone else's feelings. Just, you know, I'm tired, I want out. So impersonalism is like that. You know, it's just I don't care about anyone else. I just want my own liberation and bliss. So that's why it's compared to suicide. I think we need to move on to one more question by Bob.
In paragraph 18, it's written that affection is his set of teeth. What's the meaning of that statement?
Affection is his set teeth. Illusion is his smile. I have to look that up. Let's see. Illusion, does anyone recall that? Illusion is a set of teeth. It's verses 18 and 19 of the first chapter. Let's see. So, it is... I'm sorry, I'm having a hard time finding it. Illusion is a set of teeth. 18. Yeah, somehow I'm sorry, I'm not connecting with it. As far as I understand, it refers to, or attachment rather, is a set of teeth. It refers to the nature of the smile and the tongue, the mouth. You know, like that verse is said that controlling the tongue begins with, I mean, spiritual life begins by controlling the tongue. Who can quote that verse? Anyone remember? Yeah. Jivadao is tongue, yes. What is that verse? Rishikesha, Rishikanam, Sevanam, Bhaktir, Ujjate. Yes. So the mouth is such a sensuous part of the body. So attachment is the teeth. When your teeth start going bad, by Bob, you won't understand the meaning of this verse.
It's like
affection.
Yeah.
Affection is it. Is I'm sorry, I'm unable to find that on the spot. I'll have to look it up and let you know. It's taken from the second canto. Okay, so thank you. Gopal Prabhu, kindly talk about today's verse.
So, Canto 2, Chapter 3, Verse 10. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Ekama Sarva Karma Va. Moksha Kama Urdur Diha. Tivena Bhakti Yogena. Yajeta Purusam Param. Maybe we'll just have one male and one female say the verse, maybe.
Akama
Sarva Kama Va.
Moksha Kama Udaradi.
Tivrena
Bhakti Yogena.
Tivrayan Bhakti Yogena.
Yajate Purusham Param.
Yajate Purusham Param. Akama Sarva Kama Va.
Moksha Kama Udaradi.
Tivrena Bhakti Yogena. Jeta Purusham Param. Akama. One who has transcended all material desires.
Sarva
Kama.
One who has the
sum total of material
desires.
Va.
Either.
Moksha Kama.
One who desires liberation.
Udaradi.
With broader intelligence.
Tivrena.
With great force.
Bhakti Yogena.
By devotional service of the Lord.
Yejeta.
Should worship.
Purusham.
The Lord.
Param.
Supreme Whole.
This is very similar to the verse we're going over. In the mornings.
A person who has broader intelligence, who may be full of all material desire, or may be without any material desire, and who also desires liberation, by all means must worship the Supreme Whole Personality of Godhead.
Maybe the ladies can read one paragraph each, and I have just one or two comments about each paragraph, I think. So we'll stop at the end of each paragraph.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, is described in the Bhagavad Gita as Purushottama, or the Supreme Personality. It is He only who can award liberation to the impersonalists by absorbing such aspirants in the Brahmajyoti, the bodily rays of the Lord. The Brahmajyoti is not separate from the Lord, as the glowing sun ray is not independent of the sun disk. Therefore, one who desires to merge into the supreme impersonal Brahmajyoti must also worship the Lord by Bhakti Yoga, as recommended here in the Srimad Bhagavatam.
Bhakti Yoga is especially stressed here as the means of all perfection. In the previous chapters, it has been stated that Bhakti Yoga is the ultimate goal of both Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga, and in the same way, in this chapter, it is emphatically declared that Bhakti Yoga is the ultimate goal of the different varieties of worship of the different demigods. Bhakti Yoga, thus, being the supreme means of self-realization, is recommended here. Everyone must therefore seriously take up the methods of Bhakti Yoga, even though one aspires for material enjoyment or liberation from material bondage.
You're right.
It's usually the word moksha is usually translated as the liberation of merging into the Brahmajyoti, which is impersonal liberation. That's the one Kalakanta was talking about is like suicide, because you're trying to annihilate any personal relationship. Our relationships in this world are often so miserable that we think, God or heaven or whatever must be just the opposite. So we try to negate these relationships because we've had such a bad experience. We think that relationships in the spiritual world must be the same, or relationships with Godhead must be similar. So they prefer naturally a kind of merging into the Brahma Yoti. And also, it says here about Jnana Yoga, I believe, that you have to practice Bhakti Yoga. But Jnana Yoga, Karma Yoga, and Yoga of the mystics, that all has to be tinged with devotional service to have any result, or you won't have any result. You won't even gain the results of those if they're not tinged with devotional service. So, okay, maybe we can go on. Akama, someone. Oh, I see. Akama is one who has no material desire. A living being, naturally being the part and parcel of the Supreme Whole, Purusham Purnam, has his natural function to serve the Supreme Being. Just as the parts and parcels of the body or the limbs of the body are naturally meant to serve the complete body. Desireless means, therefore, not to be inert like the stone, but to be conscious of one's actual position and thus desire satisfaction only from the Supreme Lord. Srila Jiva Goswami has explained this desirelessness. Bhajaniya Parama Purusha Sukha Matra Svagukatavam in his Sandarbha. This means that one should only feel happy by experiencing the happiness of the Supreme Lord. The intuition of the living being is sometimes manifest even during the conditioned stage of a living being in the material world, and such intuition is expressed in the manner of altruism, philanthropism, socialism, communism, etc., by the undeveloped minds of less intelligent persons. In the mundane field, such an outlook of doing good to others in the form of society, community, family, country, or humanity is a partial manifestation of the same original feeling in which a pure living entity feels happiness by the happiness of the Supreme Lord. Such superb feelings were exhibited by the damsels of Rajabhumi for the happiness of the Lord. The gopis loved the Lord without any return, and this is the perfect exhibition of the Akama spirit. Kama spirit, or the desire for one's own satisfaction, is fully exhibited in the material world, whereas the spirit of Akama is fully exhibited in the spiritual world. An example of the gopis' unconditional love was Kalikanta's not here. Vallabhasaya, maybe you know the Krishna had a headache and he first approached the sages.
So,
he approached them, right?
Because they were so much absorbed in these activities, they felt like they had no business all the time. Plus, they were thinking that if they were to clear the dust of their deed to the Lord, that they would go to hell for this offense.
Right.
You know, exactly. They were thinking like that. Right. But the gopis were thinking that. They didn't care.
Right.
That if somehow or another they could relieve Krishna's pain, they would gladly go to hell for as long as it took,
right,
just so long as Krishna's headache could be mitigated.
Exactly. They were concerned. They were concerned. Their happiness depended on his happiness. This goes along the lines of also the impersonal conception of liberation, is mitigate our suffering, is as being sometimes described as selfish. Thoughts of becoming one with the Lord or being merged in the Brahma Yoti can also be exhibitions of Kama spirit if they are desires for one's own satisfaction to be free from the material miseries. A pure devotee does not want liberation so that he may be relieved from the miseries of life. Even without so-called liberation, a pure devotee is aspirant for the satisfaction of the Lord. Influenced by the Kama spirit, Arjuna declined not to fight in the Kurukshetra battlefield because he wanted to save his relatives for his own satisfaction. But being a pure devotee, he agreed to fight on their instruction of the Lord because he came to his senses that satisfaction of the Lord at the cost of his own satisfaction was his prime duty. Thus he became Akama, Ekama, that is perfect stage of a perfect living being. Uradi means one who has broader outlook. People with desires for material enjoyment worship small demigods, and such intelligence is condemned in the Bhagavad Gita as Hitra Gyan, the intelligence of one who has lost his senses. No one can obtain any result from demigods without getting sanction from the Supreme Lord. Therefore, a person with a broader outlook can see that the ultimate authority is the Lord, even for material benefits. Under the circumstances, one with a broader outlook, even with desire for material enjoyment or for liberation, should take to the worship of the Lord directly, and everyone either an akama or shakama or mokshakama should worship the Lord with great expedience. This implies that bhakti yoga may be perfectly administered without any mixture of karma and gyan, as the unmixed sun ray is very forceful and is therefore called tivara. Similarly, unmixed bhakti yoga of hearing, chanting, etc., may be performed by one and all, regardless of inner motive. It's sometimes described, I think maybe in the Bhagavad Gita, one of the purports, Prabhupada describes going to the demigods is kind of done when something undue or almost illegal is desired, and something that is like bribing a government official or something. It's described sometimes that way also. I was talking to this one Indian shopkeeper one time, and he said he used to be a Vaishnav, but he didn't have any money, and he started worshiping Lord Shiva, and his business started doing better. So why should we worship Krishna if he's going to take everything away? So there's actually a verse in the 11th canto where it says that when I favor someone, I take everything away. And Prabhupada says he used to think about this verse and be a little bit disturbed because he was taking the order of his spiritual master, and he was thinking, well, at first I'll make a lot of money and then I'll spread Krishna consciousness that way. But Krishna had a different plan. He actually took everything away from Prabhupada, and then he came here. It's described as with $8 or whatever, but I read recently that there was no exchange for Indian currency at that time, so he really came here with nothing. He left, when he went back to India, he went back with the same $8 in rupees that he came with, so he really had nothing when he got here. So, and then Krishna gave him everything. Of course, he was completely selfless with it and just put it all back into Krishna's service. As far as this verse goes, this was a favorite one of mine for many years. I believe yesterday the question was asked if should we chant if we're not completely fixed up or we may not be following the principles, but should we chant? Of course we should chant. We should chant in all circumstances. If we ever get the idea that we should stop chanting, that's mine. So the way to decrease offenses is to continue chanting or to even increase chanting. So I remained vegetarian, and I chanted, and I read Prabhupada's books, and I kept association with devotees. But besides that, I had so many difficulties for so many years. So I always tell people, just stay connected somehow. This verse was like an excuse for me to continue devotional service, because it was like a loophole verse for me for many years. So. No, we should always stay connected. Even if we take initiation and fall, no, we should say, I've seen this. People think it's all or nothing. It's not all or nothing. We should continue with what we can do, and Krishna sees our honest endeavor. Of course, it's sincerity in the heart. Krishna knows our heart. If we're not that sincere, then we still get some result, but maybe not the full benefit. But no, we should engage in devotional service in any circumstance. So I think that's about all I really had to say. Anybody have any comments or questions?
Just this point that Krishna taking away the everything.
Right.
I think
I don't know where it is, but then I think before that, it's like if Krishna favors someone, then actually Krishna gives.
Right.
But then if he really likes you,
right,
then he takes away.
Yeah, right. There's also there's this Buddhist mantra that claims you can get anything you desire. You know, they're talking about materially. And we also say the same thing about the Hare Krishna mantra, only it's kind of a trick because the more you chant, the less you desire. You only desire Krishna. The more you chant, the more you perform devotional service, the more you just desire Krishna. So in that sense, it really is immaterial, your material situation, when you reach that platform. So.
In regards to what you're saying about we should continue chanting Hare Krishna, and even people who are initiated, if they still have so many desires,
right?
You're talking about their desires, not necessarily like gross, sinful things that you're doing.
Everything.
There's also a
verse in the Bhagavatam, this in the 11th canto, also something to the effect that one who realizes that devotional service is in his best interest, but still is unable to give up all material bad habits or material desires, this is actually the beginning of pure devotional service. And then it goes on to say in the purport that the mood that even if I go to hell for my offenses, I'll continue to worship Krishna under all circumstances. So this should be our mood. We should never give it up in any circumstance. We should always chant Hare Krishna. It's not barred from anyone. And there's no prerequisite. And even if we reach a very high platform and then fall down, no, we should struggle still with that and continue by any means. It's also sometimes described one can chant for millions of years and not achieve the ultimate benefit. But my understanding with that is if there's some offenses, we won't achieve Krishna Prem, but we can achieve everything up to that point. And also, I think that's also kind of understood as persons who chant in the mood of becoming one with Krishna. There's some people who chant the Hare Krishna mantra with the mood of, well, when I reach perfection, I'll actually become one with Krishna. So this kind of chanting is almost fruitless. But and under any circumstance, no, we should continue.
I was reading, so I had a question more on that same concept. I was hearing about the Chaitanya Charitamrita, especially like when Jagan Madaya. Sranda, he says that, you know, like everything will be fine with you, and as long as you stop all of your sinful
right.
activities from that point onward.
Right.
So, are we in a more merciful situation?
This is the mood of everyone at initiation. Lord Chaitanya was actually initiating Jagai and Madai at that point, and this should be the mood of everyone at initiation. Yes, I vow for the rest of my lifetime, I'm going to follow the orders of my spiritual master. Which the first order is chanting Hare Krishna, and the second order is following the four regular principles. After that is details. So, but this should be our sincere feeling at the time of initiation. But still, so many people come with this sincere desire, and then it's especially real young and early in the movement, and sometimes they run into some difficulty at some point, so they go away. No, you don't just go away. It's not all or nothing at any point. That's my personal experience. So. Ankush? I think Ankush. Nimai? Did Ankush? Did you have Ankush? Okay.
It is sometimes said that when one makes offenses, then Krishna takes him out of devotee association so that
right.
he does not commit more offenses.
Yeah, sure.
So then when one chooses to go away from devotees, then is it his personal decision or is it Krishna that is taking him away from the devotee association?
It's usually described as from offenses and Krishna's taking him away. Kalikanta is several times said it's not always that you think, well, Krishna consciousness is bad, it's just that Maya starts to look, you know, pretty attractive. And so you go for some point in Maya, some aspect of Maya. So, you know.
I was just making a point. Like usually setbacks can slow us down in devotional service. But
right.
this verse is nicer. Like even setbacks should actually encourage us to engage in devotional service more intensely.
Right. Yeah.
And I guess if we engage in devotional service more intensely, then we can achieve the perfection quickly. Like you were saying that people who take like millions of births, I guess they are like careless about performing their devotional service. So they are not very like intensely performing.
Yeah, it's like a person who was poor and achieved a great amount of wealth and then lost it again. That should be our mood. So, anybody else? Anything else? Comment or question? Krishna.
I think that you brought up a very nice point that this verse is almost like excuse to continue devotional service and because we see that many people come to Krishna consciousness, even take initiation, even take second initiation, and then after some time they leave. And then often what happens is that when we are young and enthusiastic and then, you know, don't have any other responsibility than just service, we can do. But then the waves of life comes and I don't know whether you marry or get job and then just it just becomes too much, and the situation changes, and then you cannot keep up. So sometimes people leave, but then those who stay, almost like I feel like audacity to continue devotional service, even though like you know, receiving initiation.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be all or nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
They have some difficulty, and they say, "Well, I'm not chanting, or I'm not following strictly the principles, so stop chanting, or we should always try to remain connected to Prabhupada and ISKCON in some way, try to keep a good relationship at least with some devotees, and do what we can." So don't burn any bridges or close any doors.
I was just wondering, like, where does that audacity come from?
I don't know. I guess from verses like this, I guess. I don't know. But that's my understanding and also partially my experience as well.
Right.
So. And also, you may lose your devotional service for, you know, the rest of this lifetime even. We see some people take to it right away, you know, and other people, they have more difficulties. It's described, there's three things that check a person's advancement in devotional service, and one is not enough previous experience. So if we don't have enough previous experience, we may fall down at some point. Another one is too many offenses, like we were saying, is Krishna takes us away because of our offenses. And the third one is that Krishna sometimes personally checks our advancement. So we may see someone may lose for the rest of this lifetime, but this is also debatable about the mad elephant offense. I've heard some devotees say that, you know, you commit the mad elephant offense and that's it, you know, you start over at zero. And I actually asked my spiritual master about this, and he said he didn't know for sure, but there's so many references in the scriptures that any bit begun, it has permanent asset, and if you do 1%, you pick up the next lifetime at 2%. It says that so many times over and over again. And somebody would have to actually show me in Scripture where it says that you commit the mad elephant offense and you start over from zero, you know, you go back to a germ or whatever, or an indragopa. Somebody would actually have to show me that in Scripture, because that's not the way I always understood it. So.
I have this CD in my car, and I've heard Prabhupada say this so many times when I turn the car on.
Right, okay.
Over and over again, the same statement. And when I first heard it, I thought, wow. He's talking about the nine processes of devotional service, and then he is emphasizing how any one of them, if you do any one of them, your life can become successful. And at first I was like, well, how is that possible if you... you might not chant, but you'll do some service, or you might, you know, hear Bhagavatam right. class, but not chanting rounds. And right. I was kind of bewildered, but just hearing this talk, it's making me think that, like you said, if you can't do all, if you do something, if you right. stay connected and you do some service, that might not be the most successful point in your life, right. but you can achieve success eventually by not right. going completely away. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll stay in touch and eventually you'll start chanting again or, yeah. you know. Exactly. So, but it's a statement Prabhupada made. Right. So even one process can bring you success.
Yeah, even it may be stopped for this lifetime even. Yeah. I heard a lecture by Prabhupada years ago. He was talking about offering prayers and worshiping as being two of the processes of devotional service. And he says, so they go to church, they go to temple, they go to mosque, they worship and offer prayers. Someday they'll walk out pure devotees. It's this mentality, don't go to church, don't go to mosque. It's so dangerous for human society. So what you said reminded me of that also. That was something I remember from quite a ways back.
I was just thinking that maybe it's not so much personal audacity, but rather the compassion of the devotees around you. Just because if we see somebody who's struggling and we give them a hard time and push them farther away, then it'll be harder
right, exactly.
for them to feel comfortable.
Prabhupada also actually said that about sannyasis that have fallen down. Don't make them feel like they can't come back.
Yes, it's just how it's important that when we see people struggling to just continue friendship.
Was that this morning where it came up that actually even Krishna can't award devotional services, but the devotees have to award it? It's awarded by devotees. So if the devotees are compassionate, then there's. If the devotees remain compassionate, then there's hope for the person. All right, thank you very much.